What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, so Simon Rosenberg is waiting in the green room. But first, just a quick reminder, our full coverage of Joe Biden's State of the Union and Katie Britt's hilarious response is featured on last week's Friday After Party podcast on our Patreon page. All you got to do is subscribe for at least $1 a month, and you can listen to Friday's episode. Normally, you'd have to be subscribed to the After Party level for $10 a month, but we're gifting Friday's show to our subscribers at all levels. So get going, patreon.com/BobSeskaShow, and sign up for any paid level of support. Then download the app, sign in, and you're all set. Again, that's patreon.com/BobSeskaShow, and now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Today's Rachel Maddow Show Award for Headline Excellence goes to Bob Seska.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, March 13, 2024, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 1,149 of the Biden-Harris administration, 237 days until the 24th presidential election. You can find me on Threads and Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, and our Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, so if you're panicked about the polls and the current status of the presidential campaign season, you've come to the right podcast. Today is Simon Rosenberg Day on the show. Simon is the founder of the New Democrat Network and the Hopium Chronicles, his must-follow Substack. I got a link in the description for that. You've also seen him on MSNBC and podcasts such as this one. Well, today we talked about the disconnect between the economy and the polling, the importance of fundraising as a metric, the age issue, and so much more. Meantime, don't forget to support this podcast by subscribing to us on Patreon, patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Okay, here's my talk with the great Simon Rosenberg.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
I'm stuck.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk with you today is there seems to be, as you've observed, a fair amount of panic over the fact that there's this weird, frustrating disconnect between, like, for example, the success of the economy and how voters actually see the economy. These two things are kind of different for some reason, and I can't wrap my head around it. I mean, how real is that disconnect? And is the disconnect the consequence of some bad polling, perhaps?
Well, let's have a conversation about it.
Right.
Yeah, look, I think we have to be – there are two ways I would respond to your question.
Mm-hmm.
One is that our obligation at all times is to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And to be truthful to our fellow citizens, to not sugarcoat anything. I think in a time when truth itself is being so challenged, when there's so much mis- and disinformation in our system, where – our information integrity, as I call it, has been so challenged that we need to hold on to this concept of objective reality mm-hmm. with everything we have. And the truth is the economy is far better than it was. We are better off today under Joe Biden. It's not even a close call. I mean, if you think back to where things were when he became president,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we were in the midst of COVID pre-vaccine. The economy was in free fall. The global economy was under threat. We just had an insurrection in the United States, and the federal government was, the Congress was there was like a military occupation of the city that lasted about 50 days.
Yeah.
The country was in unbelievable turmoil. And today, and I won't bore everyone with all the statistics because we hear them all the time, but, you know, we have the best recovery of any advanced economy in the world.
Yep.
We are the best job market since the 1960s, the lowest uninsured rate in American history. The stock market is setting records, even with inflation, real wage, you know, real wages or wages above inflation have been very, you know, strong this year after a bumpy 2022. And so, you know, by all these economic measures, we are better off. The American people are better off. The country's better off than we were. And I think that we can't allow the right-wing noise machine and other our interpretations of what we're talking about to color the actual reality of what's happened.
Yeah.
But then the second part of it is what you're getting at, is, well, why don't people understand that more?
Right.
And I think that's – Paul Krugman's been writing about this a lot in the New York Times, and I think that my view on this is a little nuanced. One is that by many measures of satisfaction, things are people are giving very high scores to life satisfaction, job satisfaction, income satisfaction. Axios just did a poll where they try to really separate out people's feelings about the overall economy and their own economy, their own, how they're doing.
Yeah.
And they found, again, very, very heightened understanding that people themselves were doing okay, but this thing called the economy, right, was not doing so well. Yeah. And so underneath all of this is there's a lot of attitudinal evidence that people understand that things are better and that things are going pretty well. For themselves and their families and their own lives, right? I mean, I've been stunned by the life, job, and income satisfaction numbers, which are up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Very counter, I think, to what you'd expect given some of this other polling. The second thing is that when you break it out by party, Democrats are very happy with the economy. They're happy with Biden's management of the economy, stewardship of the economy. They're happy with Joe Biden. They're happy by many measures, and they don't think the economy is bad. What's happened is that we're in this place now, we're in these kinds of national issues like on the economy and healthcare and other things. Biden gets like a zero rating from MAGA, right? So statistically what it does is it draws down the overall number. I mean, Democrats would give a 20% rating, right, to Trump or something, because Democrats aren't as you know, ideological as Republicans are. And Paul Krugman's been writing a lot that we now have a lot of data showing that what's dragging these numbers down are a really ideological understanding of the moment by MAGA voters. Yeah. And that by many, so I feel like, look, my general view about where we are right now, Bob, is that Joe Biden is a good president, the country's better off, the Democratic Party is strong and winning elections all across the country, and the Republicans are stuck with Trump, and he's the worst candidate in American history, the most unfit guy to ever run for president, who's far more degraded, extreme, and dangerous than he was, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And we should be able to kick his ass in this election.
Right, right. And the thing that confounds me, Simon, about that is, as you've chronicled many, many times, Donald Trump is a gigantic loser. I mean, you know, you could go back to 2016 and he lost the popular vote in that election, even though he won in the Electoral College, lost in 2018, 2020, 2022, all these special elections in between. And yet the Republicans seem to be willing to just let him take over the entire party. I mean, they're literally taking
over. I don't think it was
like
willing.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was willing. I don't know. I think my view about what's happening with Republicans now, and let me just continue on your riff of loser, right? He's losing in court all over the place, right? The Republican Party is broke and broken, right? The party apparatus itself is really struggling. They're going through this unbelievable turmoil at the RNC. They're not raising any money. They have dozens of prominent Republican Party officials all across the country who've been indicted. You know, you have this now mass exodus out of the House. It's like the House Republicans are treating the House now like a burning building. I mean, they're all jumping out windows, you know, and getting out of there. I mean, you know, retiring next week, right? Not even waiting until January. You know, wherever you look there, what you see is turmoil and you know, MAGA craziness and MAGA madness. And so you have that too, Bob, right? Mm-hmm. Like that institutionally, their thing is as ugly as we've seen in the modern era of American politics. And then I always get asked, then, well, why aren't the polls better?
Yeah.
Look, I think the way I try to talk about the polls now, and I've been trying to figure out a better analogy, and I think I've sort of come up with, it's like we're at the end of the first quarter of a basketball game and we're down 2 points. That doesn't mean we're losing the game. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It means that, you know, most of the game hasn't happened yet. We got 8 months ahead of us. It's a life, more than a lifetime in politics.
Yeah.
And a lot's going to happen. No one's spent much money. You know, the field operations aren't on the ground. I mean, 90% of the election hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yeah. So we got a long way to go. And I think that, you know, what I come down to as somebody who's been doing this a long time and been in campaigns is that, you know, we have a strong argument to make for Joe Biden, and we've barely begun to make it. And I think that when we do, we know from polling that his numbers will improve when people are informed. Mm-hmm. And we only have to inform people in 7 states. We don't have to inform people in all 50 states. It would be better if everybody knew, but certainly it is coming down to the battleground. And I think that Trump's negatives, you know, he's moved further away from the electorate. He's more extreme and more dangerous. He's, you know, got all these, he's a serial criminal. He betrayed the country. I just don't know how you overcome once the shooting starts and the ads fly. I don't know how he overcomes. The real question is not about Biden's age. It's that how in the world does Trump overcome all of the extraordinary challenges that he has? And become and remain a competitive candidate. And I think the reason why there's sort of this quiet confidence in Biden world is that we know, those who've been in campaigns know that the stuff he has to overcome is just, it's almost impossible to imagine that he's going to be able, because it's much worse than 2016 or 2020, right?
Yeah.
The stuff we're going to be able to talk about is far, far worse. He's much more degraded than he was. And so I'm sanguine that, you know, if this was a chess match, right, when all the pieces start moving, we're going to start taking, you know, their horses and their rooks, you know, their bishops pretty early in the game.
Yeah.
But we'll see. You know, it really, I think that to me, the sort of the superpower we have, the secret weapon that we have has been all of you and everyone who has worked so hard in these elections and helped push our performance to the upper end of what's possible. The election isn't going to just win itself. We have to go win it for Joe Biden and for the Democrats.
Yeah, and the money is a bigger deal than I think is being made out there as far as a metric for who could end up on top in November. And Joe Biden's raising all kinds of money, setting new records. And meantime, Donald Trump is bankrupting the RNC. Am I right on that? I mean, the money game is a bigger deal than
if you look at if you look at the communications coming from the Biden campaign itself, right?
Yeah.
These are political professionals. They are spending a lot of time talking about the institutional problems the Republican Party is having right now because they know how serious it is. It may not be as obvious to people who have not been in the game, but for the Republican Party to be as broke as it is right now, for Trump to be raising more money each month than he's taking in. Hey, I'm going to just take a little break. My dog has started. He somehow escaped where he's supposed to be, and he's got a very loud bark. Yes, give me 60 seconds.
Okay? No worries. No worries. There he goes. Okay, we're going to take this opportunity to take a short break, and when we come back, more with Simon Rosenberg right after these words.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, Hi, it's Randy Rhodes, and here's what you missed.
I think we understand that the priorities of the two men that are holding themselves out to be the next president of the United States are completely different. The RNC is broke. Really, the RNC has $8 million in cash on hand. $8 million. The Democrats have like $100 million, okay? Just so you know, that's what the RNC is supposed to have ahead of an election. And they don't, because Donald Trump took $50 million that we know of and paid lawyers with it. And now he's got his daughter-in-law in charge of the RNC and firing every single person that works for the RNC, including the contractors, because he doesn't want to, nor can he pay anybody. I mean, this is very sick and it's very sad, but this is really the state of the RNC. It's not the state of our union, because we have a president, Joe Biden, who keeps us strong. Don't have time to listen to the live show? Want to hear more on your schedule? Go to randyrhodes.com and buy a stinking podcast.
Bob Seska.
All-time favorites all day long.
Hey.
Hey, got the sound of Simon Rosenberg running up a set of wooden stairs.
Use it however you want. So let me go back to where I was.
We're talking about the money. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you notice in the last few days, if you are on the press list of the Biden-Harris campaign, mm-hmm. they have been spending a lot of time talking about this institutional weakness of the Republican Party. The fact that the party's in turmoil, that it isn't raising a lot of money, that Trump is raising more money than he's taking in, that dozens of these Republican Party officials in the critical states have been indicted.
Yeah.
And, you know, we now see this mass exodus out of the House. The reason this matters is that in a presidential election, most of the money and the staff go through the party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the foundation of the House, so to speak, of the general election House. And the Republicans' foundation is really weak. And we've never seen the kind of turmoil that we're seeing right now is really unprecedented since I've been in this business in the 1980s. You've never seen a party, you know, firing, you know, the bloodbath that the RNC is, as Politico called it. This stuff never happens like this.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, yeah.
And it's in part because of Trump's complete insanity and his madness. That he can't, you know, he can't run a two-car funeral, right? I mean, these guys are, and so they have to go run a really large, big enterprise
mm-hmm.
against a group of people who've been doing this again and again and again for a long time.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden, this is going to be his fourth time on a national ticket, right? Because he was the VP for Obama twice. He's now, you know, and so he's one of the most experienced presidential candidates in American history. And the other guys are, you know, Mar-a-Lago chumps. And right. and so it is, I think that they have to mount a very big campaign to match what we're about to go do.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that we witness as professionals are we're seeing unprecedented levels of turmoil and rot and madness inside the Republican thing itself. And look, Mitt Romney, former Republican nominee for president, not all that long ago, said he's not voting for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Liz Cheney, the daughter of the vice president of the United States, conservative, right wing even, right? Cheney,
yeah.
not supporting Trump. A Republican senator from Alaska, I'm forgetting his name, just said he's not going to vote for Trump. We're already seeing also the party splinter, you know, in ways that are also unprecedented in the modern era. In mm-hmm. 2022, one of the reasons we did so well was these Trumpy candidates in the battleground were unable to bring the Republican Party back together, because there's a big chunk of the Republican Party, 20-30%, that's just not MAGA and is not interested in following along any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that constituency, that part of the Republican coalition, is probably even bigger than it was in 2020 and 2022 because Trump and MAGA have become more extreme and more dangerous. And so if you had reasons to be worried about Trump and MAGA before, now you got twice as many reasons, right, to
That's
be
right.
worried.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're a Republican. And so I think all that adds up to what we're seeing is that Donald Trump is not strong. He's weak.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you were getting at, Bob, right? This is what you were saying. he's not, you know, he's not a, a man of enormous power. He's a man of enormous bullshit. Yeah. Right. And, you know, my line on this is that you can paint his face, dye his hair, strap a girdle on him and a diaper too, pump him full of speed, and he's still not going to look like a presidential candidate ever again. Right. And, you know, or that he wears more makeup than a drag queen. Like, whatever these things we have to do, we have to start poking and penetrating this completely false and fraudulent impression that he's strong, historically strong, has some deep connection with the working class.
Yeah.
All this ridiculous stuff that has never been true.
Right.
And it was not, and it is not true today. He's got a few good polls. There are lots of polls showing us doing just fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you take away, if, you know, in a few weeks, we're ahead by 2 or 3, 4 points in the polls, Trump's literally going to have nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're in a very precarious place. Look, the warning signs for the Republican Party are there if you choose to look for them.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose to ignore them, then you end up with this looking like a good election for them. But I think when you broaden the aperture of what's available to us to understand, you know, their thing looks deeply troubled right now.
Yeah. And I get the sense, too, that the Biden campaign only just really kicked off last Thursday with the State of the Union address. I feel like that was the starting point for Joe Biden's reelection campaign. And I think what we miss by Trump being president for 4 years is that, you know, it's okay for the president to not be up in our faces 24/7. And I think it was misinterpreted by a lot of voters and certainly by the political press as the White House staff hiding Joe Biden from the public, when in fact, he was just doing the work and is now in campaign mode. And we're starting to see the results of that, even in some of these polls as well, that are showing Joe Biden nationally in the lead. And yeah. So this is, I think this is a point of encouragement.
Listen, I think that we won't really know where the race is for another 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think that there was what I called asymmetrical engagement. They were having a primary. We weren't. Republican voters had reasons to be checked in. Our voters didn't. You know, a big chunk of our coalition is wandering right now. Our job, you know, is to go, you know, my view is half or three quarters of them will come home once it's really clear that it's Biden and Trump. And then we've got a campaign to go get the rest and hopefully even go beyond what we did and win this election by, you know, not a few points, but by a lot of points. And so the election is clearly a repudiation of MAGA.
Yeah.
Which I think is what we all want, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want this to be a close election. We want it to be a blowout. I think it's possible, but you know, only if we work very hard, and if the Biden campaign, you know, does a really good job. But I think that, you know, I was just talking to a reporter before we came on here, and I was trying to articulate what we're describing, and I said that, you know, I think for those of us who've been on campaigns and understand the arc of a campaign, and you know, there's, I think, many professionals actually view this race far more favorably, you know, than just looking at polls. I mean, if all you have in front of you is polling, that says one thing. But if for those of us who are in the business, you evaluate the health of a candidate or a party by something far more comprehensive than just polling, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much money they're raising, their performance on the stump, the quality of their arguments. Do they have baggage that you can exploit, right? There's you know, quality of the campaign manager and the team. These are all things that are used to, I mean, you know, evaluate the health of a candidate or a party. And yet in our national discussion, much of what is being discussed is only polling. And and that all these other things that professionals use to evaluate the health of a candidate or a campaign or a party committee are not being used if you have a polling-centric understanding. And so part of the reason I got, you know, Tom Bonier and I and others got the election right in 2022 is that we looked at a lot more stuff than just polling, right, in order to evaluate where the election was. And fortunately, we were right about it.
In terms of Joe Biden's age and the polling around Joe Biden's age, I get the sense that there's a follow-up question the pollsters aren't asking people who decide to answer their telephones. And obviously the question is Joe Biden too old to serve a second term as president? And then, of course, people answer. But there's not the follow-up question, which is, but will you vote for him anyway? Why isn't that question being asked?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it is asked in indirectly by the, you know, when asking the head-to-head with
Oh, I see.
Right. With Trump, right? Yeah. But Let me say this about his age, because I think it's a serious matter, and I don't think we should dismiss it, because it is a concern of many, and it's a legitimate concern. I mean, my view is twofold on this. One is that I think we have to be comfortable saying that Joe Biden's been a successful president, and he's been successful because of his age and experience, not in spite of it. And
right.
that, you know, we may be blessed, and in a time of the turmoil that I described earlier, that having the most experienced person to come into the White House in all of our history in a time of tumult was a blessing for the country and not a curse. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is, we also have to be honest that people are living much longer than they used to, that life expectancy, you know, that people are now living productively into their 90s and their hundreds, which is something that never happened when we were younger, Bob, or very seldomly. Yeah. And that the concept of age and how what age is changing. And we should be honest about that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there are people now working, you know, well into their 90s and staying active and employed and doing meaningful things. Mm-hmm. And so Joe Biden is only 81 years old, right? And it really has to do, so this notion that he's old and infirm as opposed to being old.
Yeah. Right.
Is I think we've just in the last 10 days, I mean, there's been a massive, I think, repudiation of that. His speech was part of it, but also we now know that the special counsel who generated much of the recent discourse and discussion around Biden's age and so-called infirmity, we now know that he was lying.
Yep.
And that, in fact, Joe Biden did remember his son's birthday. And it really is shocking that somebody who worked for the Department of Justice and is a lawyer, you know, produced a document that was lied about something so consequential as this, which then created weeks of news cycles and discussion around this. It was a political hit job. And it's a reminder that, you know, when one of our two political parties is willing to overturn an American election and end democracy for all time, they're really capable of doing just about anything, including, you know, lying overtly about the issue of Biden not remembering his dead son's birthday,
right? Yeah.
Which is like you would think is so outside the bounds of decency that it's hard to believe it even happened.
Yeah.
But it did.
Yeah.
And it's who they are.
So do you foresee this continuing to be a negative issue, or do you feel as though it seems like it's been put to bed? I mean, it seems like the State of the Union, maybe Lawrence O'Donnell thing. Yeah,
I don't think it's been put to bed. I think it's an issue we have to manage, right? Like,
candidates
have balance sheets. They have assets and liabilities. Biden's age is both an asset and a liability, in my view. Mm. As I said earlier, it's something we have to manage, right? It's part of the landscape. It's not going to go away. I mean, for a lot of people who don't pay that much attention to Biden and to politics, you know, they've been flooded. Social media has been flooded by the right with imagery of Biden looking confused or stumbled, right? But yet, when he had to, you know, when the lights were shining last week in the State of the Union, and this question about his, you know, his competency and his capabilities were under scrutiny, mm-hmm. he rose to the occasion. And I think, you know, somebody, I don't know that I buy this, but it's an interesting idea that the Republicans have been so invested in his being, you know, having cognitive decline that when he got up and spoke for an hour, that the bar had been set so low that he like went way over the bar, and that was their fault, right? Mm-hmm. That happened because they had set the bar so low. And, you know, I think there's some merit to that. I think there's some, you know, but listen, our job here is that it's like what you do, Bob, right? Is that we just have to keep our head down. We have to keep working hard. Joe Biden's a workhorse. He's not a show horse.
Yeah.
I think that the American people are desperate to get back to something that feels like normal.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden feels a lot more like normal than Donald Trump. And we have to remember that every day.
So there's been a lot of talk this week, Simon, about a racial realignment, allegedly. So there's this chart that's being circulated that alleges to show Black and Hispanic voters abandoning the Democrats. Is this just another panic narrative, or is there something to this?
No, I mean, like everything, there is a little bit to it, but it's been grossly exaggerated. and Tom Bonier had a very the thing you're writing, the most recent iteration of this was from a data analyst at the Financial Times, whose work I admire, and but who doesn't always write about polling, and he writes about a lot of other data. And there were sort of two things wrong with the way that he constructed that chart and that thread and his analysis. One is, and Tom Bonier wrote about this a couple of days ago, that his cohort he was describing were people of color, and not Black, Hispanic, Asian, but people of color. And what Tom reminded us that 50 years ago, people of color in the United States were African Americans, and those, let's say they voted 90-10 Democrat or 85-15 Democrat. If you add a group into that who are 2-to-1 Democrat, Hispanics, then the numbers are going to go down, right? This is just a math thing, right? If it's 85%, let's say it's 85-15, and now you add a group that's 65-35, then the Democratic share of people of color will decline, even though there's been no actual decline. Do you understand the math of that, right?
Yep.
And so that was one of the Jedi mind tricks of that of that chart that John did in the Financial Times. The second one that was the thing that even very prominent folks like at 538 really went after him about was that his main way that he projected 2024 was off this most recent New York Times poll, which was a very low sample poll. It was under 1,000 interviews, which is not a lot these days.
No.
And when you have a low sample poll, the top line numbers may be correct, right, in the way that polling works and mathematically and statistically. But when you have samples of these subsample groups that have 100 interviews or 150 interviews, the margin of error goes from 3% to 10%, 12%. And the data basically becomes meaningless, right? Yeah. Because it could be 40%, it could be 50%, it could be 30%. It's too big a variance. And so traditionally, we don't do a lot of subgroup analysis on polls that have 800,000 person sample interviews because the margin of error of those subgroups are so high.
Yeah.
And yet this election cycle, this has now started becoming a thing. There were a lot of things that went wrong in 2022, but this is like a new thing that's going wrong. And it's really the person who's validating a lot of this is Nate Cohn in the New York Times, who's, you know, pushing the demographic subgroup breakouts of his poll, his polls, even though they're very low sample polls. And so I'm not going to tell you there hasn't been a little bit of movement, particularly with younger Black and Hispanic men, but it's nowhere anywhere near on the level that this, you know, that this graph and this analysis demonstrated. And we also know that some of our coalition's wandering, right? We know that the parts of the coalition are wandering, not with any, you know, big surprise, or are younger people who feel distant in our coalition who are distant from Biden. And so, you know, we have work to do, but that was, you know, there just seems, I go back to this basic observation about what happened in 2022 is that if you looked at all the data in the final few weeks, you could see a red wave. If you looked at the data, you also could see a close competitive election. And what ended up happening was that many analysts looked at the Republican favorable data and dismissed the data that was more favorable to us, even though it was there. I mean, part of what I did, Bob, at the end of the election, right, is I was throwing all this other data in everybody's face every day on TV and on Twitter and so on, saying, hey, by the way, there's this other data showing the election was close and competitive. And in some ways, this is happening all over again, right, where there, you know, as you pointed out, in the last week, there have been four national polls showing Biden ahead. All of them showed significant movement towards him.
Yep.
Those polls got no attention and no press. They were dismissed as being, even though they're all high quality, they're all over 1,000 person sample polls. All the organizations that did them were independent. They weren't leaning, they weren't Democratic affiliated organizations. And yet the New York Times poll, which is a lower sample poll and which had a lot of problems in it, it had, you know, but Trump winning both women and Hispanics, which is literally an impossibility, right, in the election, is being treated as more true than these other polls. And I don't, and again, what that is, that's a choice. That's a choice to say, I'm giving preference to data that favors Republicans, and I'm downgrading or dismissing the data that appears favorable to Democrats. What's surprising to me is, given the fact that so many people did that and then were so wrong about the election in 2022, it's stunning to me that it's happening again. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if it continues to happen. But certainly, I've been a little surprised how we're sort of going back into something that was so obviously a big failure by many people.
Yeah, you know, one of the states that popped onto my radar after Super Tuesday, and I think yours too, was North Carolina. Based on the anti-Trump Nikki Haley voters, I feel like it could actually end up being a toss-up. But, you know, Chris Boozy is way more bullish on this than I think either of us, because he's putting it directly in the Biden column for now. And if true, it could actually signal a much larger victory for the Biden campaign than we expect, right?
I mean, look, here's what we know there. This is, of the seven battleground states, it's the only one we didn't win. We had, in 2020, we had, I would argue, disappointing performance there in the last two elections. We have had good candidates, but we've had a weaker party and sort of apparatus underneath. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the reason we've done so well in Arizona and in Georgia, for example, is that we had very, very strong parties and political operations underneath. You know, the foundation of the House I was describing earlier was very strong. We haven't had that in North Carolina. There's been underperformance there at a sort of structural party level. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've seen a lot of polling in North Carolina. I'm raising money for Anderson Clayton, the North Carolina party chair, and I've made it one of my highest priorities, because I think that we have a special year in North Carolina. The Republicans have nominated a particularly extreme candidate, Mark Robinson, who is, I think, going to give us a lot of opportunities to, you know, go get voters that were not available to us before. And, you know, the very first set of polls that just came out this week, that were independent, not Republican polls, had Josh Stein, our candidate for governor, beating or ahead of Robinson by 2 points. And it just shows that North Carolina is almost certainly going to be a very competitive state. But like other states, we have a lot of work to do, and we don't have as much history of either winning there, and we have our foundation there is weaker. And so what I've been doing, my way I've been helping North Carolina, is that I had Anderson Clayton, the dynamic 26-year-old new chair of North Carolina, on the Hopium, talked to the Hopium community back in November. She's coming back tonight to speak to us, to just give us a quick update now that the primary is over. And we've raised over $100,000 for her, which I'm really proud of. And that money's going into the party. It's not going into candidates. And when you give the money to the party, that's fielding, that's the grassroots operation. That's the machinery right underneath. Mm-hmm. And we've made a really substantial early investment there as a community. And I'm really proud of that. And so, yeah, I think North Carolina, you know, look, you got to expand the map. You've got to, you know, if you want to win 50 seats, you got to play in 80. If you want to, you know, we need to put more in play. And I know the campaign is keeping an eye on Florida. I think it's unlikely that we'll go in, but we have to see what happens with the abortion ballot initiative there, you know, which is going to, in all likelihood, we'll know very soon whether it's going to be on the ballot this fall. There's also going to be a cannabis ballot initiative. And, you know, there could be an opportunity to, you know, try to make Florida competitive this cycle, depending on what happens. I know that sounds insane, right? But it's not, it's there in the data. And you know, DeSantis is now playing defense. He's come back and said that the book banning went too far. You know, they're terrified about the 6-week abortion ban, because you know, they passed a 6-week abortion ban in Florida, which means that their candidates there are gonna have to defend an indefensible policy that polls at, you know, 15-20%, even in places like Florida. And so, you know, I'm not giving up on Florida yet. You know, I did a call this morning with a prominent person, political person there, who's pitching me on getting more involved. I mean, we had good wins with Donna Deegan in Jacksonville in May, and Tom Keene flipped a seat in Orlando, and January. So we've had success this cycle. Mm-hmm. Whether we can make it competitive, I mean, I'm not giving up, but I don't know that that's a likely scenario.
So is there still a ballot initiative about reproductive rights in Florida? Is that, or did that get killed?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So, yes, there is a they got the signatures. It's now in front of the Supreme Court. The general view is that the court will let it go. But until it does, we don't know what will happen. There is a remote, not a remote chance. There's a chance that the Supreme Court in Florida will knock it out. Will knock it out and prevent it from being on the ballot initiative this time. But even if it isn't, Republicans in Florida have to defend a 6-week abortion ban, which is politically going to be very, very difficult for them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And just turning to Arizona real quick, you mentioned Arizona a second ago. Ruben Gallego is blanketing social media with bad polling as a fundraising motivator. But is that race against Carrie Lake?
I've talked to Ruben. I've actually talked to Ruben about this myself, right? And because it's come up in the Hopium community. Because the truth is, the last two polls there had him up. Mm-hmm. Outside a margin of error and against Carrie Lake, right? And in a comfortable position. Still early, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and this was with Sinema still. But when you pulled Sinema out of the race, he had, you know, more than 5-point leads in two different polls. And I think that I talked to him about this. And I actually we engaged on this because I told him that there are people who felt that those ads were dishonest, right?
Yeah.
Because they weren't actually reflective of what. So you have the campaign sending out the good polls, and then you have the fundraisers showing a bad poll, and so people are confused. And I think we are going to have a big conversation in the family about how much negative sentiment fundraising creates, and this idea that fear is what drives money. You know, the problem with that is it's also convincing Democrats that things are worse than they really are, which I don't think is really a good thing. And so, no, look, Ruben, all seven of these presidential battlegrounds are going to go down to the wire, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ruben is doing well in part because he's got, like Mark Robinson, an extreme opponent, Carrie Lake.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's important about the battlegrounds mm-hmm. is that all of our Senate candidates are doing really well, right? I mean, nobody's struggling. No one's behind. You know, we're holding, right? The Democratic thing is holding. There is no sense of decline or collapse or struggle, right? It's holding. I mean, we don't have big leads in these states, but we have leads mm-hmm. in Nevada and in Wisconsin and in Arizona, right? I mean, Pennsylvania, right? We're doing well. There is no sign, there is no structural sign of Democratic struggle. I mean, Biden is not where we want him to be, mm-hmm. but the Democratic brand is not going down, right?
Yeah,
it's staying about where you think you would have thought it would have been given the election results in the last two elections. And mm-hmm. so I think all of us are aware this is going to be a very hard and competitive election. I don't think there's any illusions about that. And when people ask me, well, what can I do, Simon? The number one thing we all have to do is join the Biden campaign for $5 or $10, whatever it is, and just start getting their emails. They're going to start ramping up and asking people to do more. The money you give goes to ads. They're up with a very aggressive buy now in the seven states. And so the number one job this cycle is to help Joe Biden win mm-hmm. and Kamala Harris win. And it's important that people just join the campaign. This is a very kind of threshold thing. The campaign is gearing up. They're doing national calls now. You know, there's going to be more stuff for people to do no matter where you live, right? And I'm you know, that's job number one. And the things that I'm working on, that I'm asking my community to really focus on, we're backing Ruben Gallego because of Sinema not running. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit behind in terms of money and organization, right? Because there was an incumbent Democratic senator sitting there, you know? And so there is money and support he would have gotten that he hasn't gotten yet. And so we need to play catch up. And, you know, they're a little bit, so getting money to him and help before the end of March is important. And then we're helping in North Carolina. I mean, to me right now, you know, it's Biden, North Carolina Party, Gallego. I'm going to be endorsing in some key House races in the next couple weeks. But, you know, my site, we're not going to become Emily's List. I'm not going to give everybody a million races. We're just going to pick a handful that we think are really important. Mm-hmm. And then everyone's got, you know, if you live in California, you know, job number two after Biden getting elected is, you know, flipping those House seats that we lost in 2022 back. If you live in New York, you know, we've got House seats in New York. Those are, you know, home base is priority. And then if you're looking for additional things, you can come to Hopium and see the stuff that I'm involved in. But I view the work that I'm doing as being supplemental to the core work that people have to do in their own communities or with Joe Biden.
Well, it's so important. I think if nothing else, for morale, I think it's crucial that energy drives, especially the get out the vote effort and just invaluable work, Simon. Thank you for everything you do. How can people find your Substack?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the best way to come hang out with Simon is at Hopium Chronicles. It's a Substack. It's a website. It's a newsletter.
Yeah.
And it's free. I mean, it's the most important thing is I've kept 95% of the content is free. Almost all the events are free. If you join, you get to hang out with Simon once a month and chat with him with a smaller group. But for this election cycle, I'm trying to keep as much of the material as free as possible. In order to make it more accessible for everybody, because given the stakes here. And so come test drive it, check it out. It's free. You know, I produce content 6 days a week. We also have fun speakers. Gavin Newsom came and hung out with us last week for our first birthday.
Yeah.
Gavin's an avid Hopium reader and an old friend. And we're tonight, Anderson Clayton's joining us. It looks like Ruben Gallego is going to come hang out with us next week. And so, you know, a couple times a month, I don't do too crazy. You know, we have folks come and hang out with us that are, you know, party leaders, thought leaders, political leaders, innovators, you know, people that I think people would find of interest, right? And so it's a fun community, and it's a community of doers. I mean, people at Hopium, you know, as we like to say, we do more and worry less. And that's the one of the main guiding lights of our work together is that we do more and worry less.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Simon. I know you got a busy schedule, but I'm so glad you took some time to hang out with us here today.
Bob, I always enjoy our talk, and I'm so grateful for the work that you do. And thanks, everybody.
You bet.
It's time to saddle up and get ready to go win this thing with Joe Biden.
You got it. We'll talk to you again next time.
Thanks, Bob.
I'm stuck in